Hi, you're tuning in to Awani Review with me, Cynthia Ng. I'm very excited today because my guest on the show is a very familiar face in the local animation industry. In fact, he created one of Malaysia's most loved animated character called Boba Boy, Nizam Razak. The creator is here with me today. Thank you so much for having me at your very nice looking office.
Thank you so much
now, for coming. Now, of course, Boba Boy, we know, is hugely successful. It is franchised in over 70 countries, correct, Nizam?
70 countries.
It has racked up more than 8 billion views on YouTube, and it has also made its way to the cinemas, the big screen. So I'm really excited to talk about the success story, number one, for Boba Boy in Malaysia. And what's more important is that you have managed to bring that IP, that character, to a global audience. You know, you're in India, you're in China, and soon I believe you're in Turkey as well?
In Turkey as well.
Yeah. Just tell us about, were you surprised at how well Boba Boy is received by the international audience?
Well, very surprised, to be honest, because when we first created Boba Boy, it's really meant for Malaysia market. Maybe furthest is like Indonesia, because we have this like a serumpun thing, right? So it's like the same from Bahasa. But after we actually pitched to like the likes of Disney, to other broadcasters, then they said that, okay, this can actually work in their market as well. But it's not as simple as that. Sometimes you need to do the localization move. We do need to sort of grow up Boba Boy a little bit, because you see, like, the original Boba Boy is a bit small to be a superhero in that sense, right? So they said, you know, you need to make him bigger. So we actually changed from Boba Boy to Boba Boy Galaxy, and all this like rebranding, reimagining certain concept, and dubbing and localization actually make the breakthrough to international market.
So tell us about Turkey. So this is an exciting month, September, and you will be going into Turkey. Not just the TV screen, but possibly the big screen.
Big screen as well. So we're going to launch, we had this deal, we've been discussing about this deal for about 6 months. We had a partner in Turkey right now. So they said that, okay, this could be a big market for Boba Boy. So not only that, they want to bring the movie, but also the series as well. So when we go into Turkey, it's not the movie alone. So we call it Boba Boy franchise. You know, hopefully, we'll be successful in the big screen, in the small screen, the TV. And also, we can export our merchandise and get some license and merchandising rights from them as well.
Is it difficult to get the character, the IP, to international markets? Does it take a lot of convincing on the part of studios, and what usually goes on? What is the conversation?
Usually they will ask about the availability of the rights, and it is sort of difficult in a way that you need to we need to convince them, you know, that this kind of show must work, can work. So what usually they will do is that they will take a sample of it, and they will sort of like a focus group. So they will do focus group, and in fact our partner in Turkey, he actually did the focus group before he met officially with us.
Right.
So he said that, you know, we'd already done the focus group and we think that it can do well in Turkey.
I want to talk about Boba Boy as a character. It was created in 2011. So it's almost 10 years now, that character, right? How do you make sure that after almost a decade, people are still excited about Boba Boy? You know, you have to cater to not just the old audience, but also to attract new audience.
We ask this question every day in our studio, because, you know, like, if it's a new show, it's like during the first 3 years, that's okay. You know, when it's about next year is the 10th anniversary of Boba Boy, so we kind of like, okay, Boba Boy, we need to make more refreshing content. But we always believe that we need to stick through to engaging storyline and memorable character. So if you see, like, Boba Boy is more like about setia kawan, about friendship, and we must make sure that it's very entertaining for the audience. And we do sometimes it's gradual, but sometimes we do like a total rebranding. For example, in 2017, we changed from Boba Boy to Boba Boy Galaxy, where we actually aged up Boba Boy in the physical sense, I would say. And then after, during Boba Boy Movie 2, we actually changed the design again to make sure that the current Boba Boy design and even the storytelling suits to the current trend.
How do you build that lasting connection with an audience, like the loyalty towards a brand?
I'm not so sure about how does it. Boba has this, his own magic in that sense, you know.
I think fans, so not just the elemental powers, but also to attract.
Because I think he's a very kind-hearted superhero, you know, and he has this super cool superpower. If you ask younger kids, they will say that I love Boba because of the elemental powers, and Boba has a lot of fangirls. And they love Boy Boy because of his personality. And we have fans like 30 over years old, yeah. You know, parents. They love Boy Boy because of some of the other characters, like, for example, Papa Zola, for example. Mm. So we have two other characters that is suitable for them, like Toh Abah, the grandfather of Boy Boy.
So that's very interesting because, you know, when you think about animated characters, you think about, you know, cartoon, it's just catered for kids, right? Mm. But how do you also get the parents and the adults to also be invested in a character?
For us, that is very important to create a show that is sort of approved by the parents. You know, the parents also must be able to enjoy. Mm-hmm. I'm a parent myself, so sometimes you watch a certain show, you wouldn't be able to enjoy that show. Only your kids will be able to enjoy that show. So it's like a 2 hours suffering or 1.5 hour in the cinema, right? Because I couldn't enjoy, but my kids really enjoy the show. So I said to myself and to the team, you know, we need to create a show that is both entertaining for their parents and also for the kids as well.
Do you get inspiration from your kids?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So they will tell me, like, you know, sort of what their version of Boy Boy in that sense, what elemental powers that could be in the future. So I think that's why I think one of the strengths of our storytellers over here, we also have kids, right? So we can actually ask them. We can ask their friends as well to see, what do you expect from Boy Boy after this? You know, what do you expect from Boy Boy movie 2 or even movie 3? So they will tell you, and then you can actually get this information and to process this information with other studies and research as well.
I want to talk about your new character, Mekamato.
Mekamato.
Yeah. Okay, tell us about this Mekamato.
Mekamato is about, you know, like from Boy Boy. So Boy Boy has been like 10 years. So we never reveal about the parents of Boy Boy. So Mekamato is actually the father of Boy Boy. And then the story is not when the father is grown up. No, it's about when the father, Amato, the same age with Boy Boy, as Boy Boy as well. Like maybe like 10, 12 years old. So this is a story where a boy meets with a destroyer robot who can actually mechanize with a normal object. For example, the robot is called Mechabot. So he can combine with a broom and mechanize it to become a high-powered rifle. He can combine with a bike, a normal bike, to become a super bike. So this, I think, is a very exciting power that I think kids will love to have a Mechabot as his robot.
Well, you've decided to push the Mechamato movie release to, I believe, next year due to the pandemic, yeah. Right? Can you just tell us the impact so far from the pandemic and then the lockdown, and how has it disrupted the local animation industry?
You know, like for us, Malaysian, right? So 2020 is always a big year. Wawasan 2020, Vision 2020. So we're like, okay, we are set. We want to release this Mekamato about future, about robot 2020. And I know the pandemic happened. And we say, okay, now it's not that we cannot finish up the production, but more into the readiness of the market. Mm-hmm. We are doing the movie right now. We are about 70 minutes in right now. So the total about 110. So we can finish by sort of end of the year. But we couldn't release by end of the year because of the cinema is not ready, the market is not ready, because we afraid that people are not comfortable yet, especially the kids, because kids cannot go to the cinema as for now. So how can we get like at least 50% of our market, right? So it does impacted us. We need to push it back to 2021 for the movie, and also for Boy Boy as well. Next year is 10th anniversary of Boy Boy. So we plan, okay, 2020 is the year of Mekamato. 2021 is going to be 10th anniversary of Boy Boy. So now we have to, like, you know, like all this dah jadi haru biru. And then we need to, like, discuss again, okay, how are we going to do this? Because I think next year is still an important year for Boy Boy. We still need something for Boy Boy for next year as well.
Yeah. The focus for Boy Boy next year, would it be more local or international?
Next year will be, I think, a bit of both, because we already have products. We have 76 episodes ready right now in terms of series. We have 2 movies. So for this product, because the good thing about animation that you can actually sell it, can be released in Malaysia 5 years ago. Now it's going to be released in new market as a new product. For example, in Turkey, right? So this month, the first movie of Boba is 2016. So now it's been released first time in the Turkey market. So you look at even the visual quality, it's not much different. It doesn't feel that it's an outdated product, you know. So that's the beauty thing about that. So we can focus on selling our current catalog. We're also making a new one for our new generation or new fans.
When you go into an international market, right, a new country, do you have to do a lot of education, educating people about the brand, the character?
Yes, of course. This is one of the trickiest part. You can have a very good story, you can have a very good character, but if they are not familiarized with that character, which is you need to put a lot of money into marketing, then they won't love the character. So we always seek for a partner that can actually not only place on TV but do extra marketing. For example, maybe a mascot tour around the around the nation. You know, we can do like a placement on TV as of as for brand awareness. So we need to find the right local partner to do that.
I want to touch a bit more about the impact of the pandemic to the local animation sector, right? Globally, we have seen a spike in demand for gaming, you know, for movies, video games especially, because more people were forced to stay at home, right? Do you see that as a positive trend for the local animation industry here?
Definitely in terms of content consumption, we can see that the spike is really high. For example, during the MCO, we decided to release Astrocheria and other OTT platforms as well. So we get a very good ratings. Everywhere we put the content, the ratings is really, really high. I guess it's because first it's a good product, second because the availability of the audience in front of the TV, right? But moving forward, the problem is not on the content, the problem is at the content readiness. You know, so this is our content is been already made. But now we need to make new content in terms of production. So the supply, the value chain of this production is getting disrupted right now. Because maybe, for example, if you have an investor from overseas, you have a buyer from overseas, they might change their plan, you know, okay, not 2021, maybe 2022, the funding will not come. So they will be halted, there will be some delayed, some even cancelled. So this is the current problem right now for the animation industry. But having said that, if we can keep on producing, if we can continue making our products, we can be ready for the post-COVID-19, because we expect in the post-COVID-19 era there will be a lack of content at that point of time.
So what are you prioritizing at the moment right here at Monster?
We are prioritizing on Mekamato because we believe we have been meeting with a lot virtually or even before COVID-19. We have been pushing Mekamato and we see Mekamato can travel further into international market. So we are, right now we are focusing on the movie and also the TV series. We've been talking to a lot of our Japanese partners. We talk about the international partners. So we had a deal during MCO period. We managed to secure a deal for Mekamato to be in APAC region, which is including Korea, Japan, Australia and New Zealand. So we believe that, you know, Mekamato should be the next step and we should focus on Mekamato.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk a bit about the business, right? Because being in this animation industry, it's not just about having the creative or technical skills, correct? Yeah. I know you need to learn the financial aspect, how to produce, how to ensure that you have the funding for the production, how to market, how to make sure you protect your IP, the legal stuff. So what are some of the challenges that you faced to put Monster on a solid business path to make it sustainable?
At first, we just wanted to, you know, just create cartoon and what cerita, you know, having our values, our culture inside this show. And then we realized that, of course, with the help of the government, you know, through MDAG funding and whatnot, and it's very good program. We had opportunity to be under incubation program. We were funded for the first season. And MDAG actually bring us to meet with various of experts from overseas as well. But when we look at the whole ecosystem, we realized funding and marketing and working is not enough, because the whole ecosystem is about licensing and merchandising as well. Mm-hmm. It's about marketing internationally, international market as well. It's about selling of rights, sell to TV and other screens. So we realized that, okay, now we have to really understand this business. It's not only an animation business. This is a character, it's a rights business. So we really changed our DNA. I told my team, we're no longer an animation company. We do have an animation department inside our company, but we are mainly a character we're in the character business. So we create characters like Boa Boy, we have Yaya, we have Papa Pipi, we have Mekamato. So like all these characters are sort of like a celebrity, you know. So you manage these characters. So these characters have their own show, like a TV series, like a movies. And from this, when the character becomes popular, then you can actually find partners to do licensing and merchandising. They can take the rights. You can do your own product. So I think for us, this understanding and this change of mindset really helped us to, in a way, create business out of this animation character.
So if you talk about Malaysia, right, Monster is definitely one of the success stories. We have, of course, Upin Ipin. Yep. We have Agent Ali from WOW Animation. However, we still have close to, I guess, about 100 homegrown studios here.
Yes.
In Malaysia. Many are still struggling to make money, to generate revenue at home, right?
Yep.
Why is it so difficult to monetize content? What is the factor, the key to monetizing your IPs?
Our first 3 years, we only focus on the production, you know. We think that, okay, when we produce good product, we will get money. But without the understanding of the division of rights, the windowing, you know, what rights to be given, how, what's the terms of these rights, and how much should you charge.
Right.
And, so these are, I think, when we understand this better, I think you can make money in a way better out of your product.
Do you think the Malaysian animation industry has matured to a point that we are ready to be a global powerhouse? Because there's a lot of interest in Malaysia as a work service hub, right, for bigger studios in Europe, in America, in Japan. But what we really want to do is really to build
our own
and to export it globally.
Yes. In terms of quality, we see that actually a lot of our studios, local studios, actually made international quality products, and these are big titles, you know, all these triple A cinematic games, they involve in the triple double A, triple A movies in China, in the States and Europe as well. But I do for Monster, we always focus on our own IP. So I'm not sure about the other companies, but for us, I think it's very important that we focus on building our own character. When you look at the Japanese, for example, during the early days, they do servicing for the US as well. And they realize, you know, why should we keep on do servicing for them, whereby we can create our own character, we can do our own, can tell our own story. And then it becomes a phenomena in the country and also the anime, right, around the world. Now, I went to Japan because I want to see Gundam, you know. I want to see Doraemon, you know, because I've been reading about this comic since I was like standard one, you know. So I think this is a potential. The Japanese really know how to monetize their character, in a sense that it's not only an animation show, it's a character, and also is a potential tourist attraction for their country.
I want to talk a bit about, you know, distribution and just putting your work out there, because I remembered reading about how you took quite a risky move to put full episodes of Boa Boa Boy on YouTube.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were skeptical about that move, but evidently that has paid off, right? So, you know, how has the industry involved, you know, for creators to put their work out there and to get recognition?
It's a very interesting story. Back in 2014, you know, because back in 2014, there's a shift of landscape in the media, you know, so we couldn't really place our show consistently on the TV. But we already had these clients already sort of paid us, right, so to work with Boa Boy. So when we couldn't place on TV on a consistent basis, so we said, okay, why not we just put on YouTube? We didn't even think about the monetization part of it, you know, just put it out there, maybe you can get millions, right? So, and then when we put it out there, and at that point of time, even YouTube guys calling, because this is a very bold move, you know, nobody is doing this, because you look at animation cost, it's very, very costly, you know, easily 8 to 10 million ringgit per season, you know, easily. So you want to risk, just put on digital for free, you know, so this is a very risky move. But I think this kind of move really opened people's eyes, you know. So we had a very good recognition by YouTube, and get a lot of views. And I think right now, if you look at the current stage, 6 years after that, everyone is putting on YouTube. every single show is putting on YouTube, or they allow their episodes on YouTube. Even the Japanese right now are putting their shows on YouTube as well. So I think this is the technology that we need to embrace, because we need to follow the audience, sort of, right?
Right, okay.
Because when they are in front of TV, you need to put on TV. Then when they are still watching TV and also on digital, we also need to follow them. So we are not, in a way, doing something revolutionary, but rather we just follow the audience.
All right. Now, something you talked about earlier is about branding, merchandising, because another dimension to the animation industry is, of course, licensing and merchandising, right? It's another form of revenue stream.
Yes.
I'm curious, you know, when you create a product, for instance, Boy Boy Boy, do you already have in mind, you know, how the IP can be translated into other products, I know, into merchandises? Or is that like an afterthought for you?
For Boy Boy, it's afterthought. Okay. For Boy Boy, it's just an afterthought.
What about Mekamoto?
Mekamoto, we planned that. Mm-hmm. We planned that earlier because we believe, you know, like, for example, if this robot can mechanize with a chair, and make this chair like become your jetpack, you know, combined with your bag, combined with the broom, bicycle. I think there's a lot of things can be merchandisable, you know. So for Boy Boy, we actually, again, we just want to create a show. But I do have this thinking, because Boy Boy can split into seven. And then these are different
seven elemental powers,
right? So there are different versions of Boy Boy. And every Boy Boy has three levels. So technically, there's a seven different versions of Boy Boy. And each one of them can combine and become Boy Boy Fusion. So there's a lot of merchandising ability to it. But at first, Boy Boy only can split into three. And then we make a show. And after like 2 years, then only we make a figurine out of it or license it out. And then now we actually have plans for Boy Boy to have their its own product as well, as to go with Mekamoto.
So definitely we're going to expect more from both Boba Boy and Mekamoto both.
Yep.
Okay, all right. I want to talk a bit about the local animation industry and how do you elevate it to the next level to be a global powerhouse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You've recently attended this MDEC conference, Creative. And what is the conversation among your colleagues, the CEOs, other creators, about really pushing the sector to the next level? A hub in Cyberjaya.
Yes.
You know, you want to be a global powerhouse.
Yep. I think people are more still concerned about the COVID-19 issue, and people are trying to figure out, you know, what's going to happen, predict, you know, post COVID-19. So, of course, when we discuss, we realize that there will be vacuum of opportunities mm-hmm. post COVID-19, maybe around 2021 next year to maybe early 2022, where we predict there will be a lot of demand, but that not enough supply. So if you can keep on producing, one of the dialogues that we had among ourselves and also to MOF as well and to MDEC, to KKMM, that we say, you know, support us to keep on producing. Mm-hmm. So we had the opportunity, the government gave what, $225 million to the creative industry, $35 million specifically to MDEC for animation, VFX and games, I think so. So this actually helps us to be ready for post-COVID-19. Because at that point of time, we want to be ready. Because if for example, in any particular year, there's 100 of products ready.
Right.
But 2021, maybe 2022, maybe there's only 20 products. We want to be one of them. You know, maybe two of 2020. So the chances of our show being picked up is much, much higher.
What is the long-term vision for Monster?
We want to create more characters.
Okay.
Definitely more characters. We want to go into more market. And when we look at other characters, for example, what about our... We have Boy Boy, Mekamoto, both boys. We also want a girl, super girl as well. So that's in plan as well. But we don't know how to put that into schedule yet. But we do have plans for that. Papa Pipi, you know, Papa Pipi is also a girl character, girl-driven. So it's Papa and Pipi, small girl, like 5 years old. Kind. So we want to focus more on Papa Pipi as well. Yeah.
Are there plans to create more adult characters, or you mainly focus to what you're doing right now?
As for now, we are more focusing on the kids business. I think for us, it's more kids business because, yes, there are appetite for adult character, sort of mature, more serious theme for animation, like in anime, right? But we look at ourselves, we can push the boundary, but we're still going to focus kids with family.
Okay.
For us, that's our main focus for Monster.
on this show, we talk about leadership. You know, I speak with people like you and talk about, you know, the learnings throughout your journey, your career, right? For those who really want to get into the animation industry, what would be your advice to them?
My advice is that, you know, creative industry or animation industry, you need to focus on creative, but never lose sight of the business aspect of it. Because I always said to my team that our product, our creative work is a destination. You know, you want to create the next movie, you want to create the next series, the next big hit. But to be able to arrive there, we need the fuel, which is the business. You know, the money side of things. You know, so we need to learn about licensing, merchandising, and I think a lot of companies, then one day, a lot of entrepreneur, they want to go into animation industry, they either they're creative and then they lack business, or they're business but they lack of creative. And for me, I would advise, I have partners, I have 4 partners. So we mix and match, you know, like, so you have to get the business people there, the finance people there. If you leave me to the finance, maybe the company won't be as good.
So you want the creative brain for
the company?
Yeah, I'm
more creative and overall as well. So I have like vision, okay, I want to create this, or why not we create this product, you know, why not we enter this market based on these entry points, yeah.
And how do you continuously have that culture of innovation in your company among your staff to keep them motivated? Because at the end, what is really important is not just the technical stuff, the storytelling that goes every step of the way of the production line.
For us, we always need to, I always try to remind myself and also my team. I said, when we first started, we were very agile. Nothing to lose, you know, just create and just, you know, just create. Maybe it works, right? So when you grow bigger, because we were like from 7 to now 120, it's not that big, but you start to feel that, okay, now we are structured, which is good, but it could also be not so positive, right? When you're so structured, you think so many things, you know, because you have a lot of knowledge right now. So I always encourage my team to think in a way, like I said in BM, cakap yang mudah jangan susahkan, yang susah kita cuba mudahkan. You know, like keep it simple. You know, right. When we approach thing, new IP, new product, keep it simple. Make sure it can scale. And then in terms of creativity, I write myself, I direct myself. So we always have a committee to review and to go through this creative processes. Not only macam, okay, I dah buat 10 years, you cannot give ideas, you know, I know what I'm doing. Not really like that. I prefer fresh blood to come in, to throw ideas, to bounce ideas, and to give their perspective. Especially in the, this is not only animation for fans as well. Some of our new team, the fans of Boboiboy, they watched Boboiboy when they were 12, 10 years old, you know. So we need to see from their perspective so that we can know how the current fan is viewing Boboiboy or Mekamato.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nizam. This is great speaking with you. And I'm really looking forward to hear more and watch Boboiboy as well as Mekamato.
Thank you so much,
Cynthia. Thank you. Well, you've been watching Awani Review with me, Cynthia Ng. We'll see you again in the next episode. Goodbye.